The following program is sponsored. The opinions and statements made by the hosts and guests do not necessarily reflect the views of WBOB or its parent company, the Chesapeake Portsmouth Broadcasting Corporation.
A news reporting that they have found Jamal Khashoggi's body parts buried in the garden. This is Sky News, have you? In the garden of the general consulate's residence, which is about, I'm going to say, about 100 yards from the Saudi consulate. So they buried the body, allegedly, according to Sky News, in the backyard, in the garden, like a compost. I know it's gross, but this thing is getting worse by the day. It really is. I mean, I don't know. How is MBS going to spin this now? I think he's running out of yarn. Joining us now, boy, we got a lot to talk about. I'm so excited to have him on. The former United States ambassador to Qatar, former United States ambassador Patrick Theros. Mr. Ambassador, it is always an honor to have you on our show, sir. Thanks for being with us.
Mine as well, John. It is a great pleasure. Sad day. I mean, terribly sad day. This.
Explain how this could be sanctioned by allegedly Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman, who's not even taken power. I mean, there's other reports now, sir, that he was directing basically traffic, if you will, to put it in layman's terms, via Skype on what was going down with Jamal Khashoggi, who's a human being that went to the consulate to get paperwork to show that he was divorced in Saudi Arabia so that he could get married to his Turkish fiance. How did this happen?
I have absolutely no idea how anybody could be that incompetent in today's world, other than the possibility that, you know, there's just no adult supervision. This seems to me, it's sort of a horrid version. You and I are old enough to remember Jimmy Breslin's book, The Gang That Couldn't Shoot Straight.
Yes.
Yeah, this is sort of a horrid version of that. It is just unbelievable.
And, you know, the other thing is Mohammed bin Salman spent all this money and effort in the United States lobbying, as you know, and he did the tour and he went around. He was in Texas and California and other parts of the country. He wore a business suit. He's trying to get, you know, he's investing money and he's trying to present himself as a new young visionary leader. And instead we get this.
Again, I'm sort of speechless. I'm speechless at their brutality. I'm speechless at their incompetence. I mean, if you're going to kill somebody, you know, you shouldn't be going around having planned assassinations of journalists, certainly. But if you're going to do it in a way that has a good chance of avoiding detection, and, you know, there's so many people in this that it would have certainly come out. And two, that when it comes out, you haven't horrified everybody who hears about it.
Mr. Ambassador, how does this affect U.S.-Saudi relations?
That's a question you have to direct to the White House at this moment. I personally believe that Mohammed bin Salman has committed one perhaps unpardonable sin. He has now basically dragged the family of the president into this.
Mm-hmm.
Until now, this was in any other country, this would have been between countries. Mm-hmm. But now he has tarnished the reputation of the president's family, simply guilt by association. And I personally believe the time has come to deliver a very strong message and not a slap on the wrist. This is the kind of message where the Saudis have to basically learn that what they are doing harms not only their reputation, harms their own country, it also harms the interests of the United States of America. I would start very much by making it clear to the Saudis that the Yemen war is over. They have to wrap it up.
Mm-hmm.
Also, I would certainly try and take whatever action we could against the people directly involved, all the way up to the... let's be in the real world. We're not going to take personal action against Mohammed bin Salman, I believe. But certainly enough of the people in his inner circle that this that it hurts.
Mm-hmm.
In the end, I mean, the commentary that they buy so much from us, that we need them badly, is not a good narrative. The real narrative is the Saudis need us much more than we need them.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a what's the word I'm looking for? It's not a one-way street, and the Saudi dependence on the United States is really quite considerable. They can't go to somebody else to buy weapons because, I mean, they can, but it means that that if they break with us, their own military comes to a screeching halt within days because we provide all the spare parts. We provide American companies and American technicians provide most of the maintenance supervision and the maintenance skills. And as I say, I don't believe the Saudi military could stay functional beyond a few weeks, maybe a month or two, without direct American support. So we have the upper hand. There's no doubt in my mind we have the upper hand. It also looks like the Europeans are going to stop selling military equipment to the Saudis. So that leaves them with the Russians as the only other viable place to go. And I'll tell you, I wouldn't want to be a country like Saudi Arabia dependent on the Russians for my defense.
Mm-hmm.
And it would take 5 years to basically stand down the American equipment and buy Russian equipment. Now, Mohammed bin Salman's reaction to a very simple tweet, minor insult from the Canadian foreign minister, very
mm-hmm.
minor,
mm-hmm.
to break relations and everything like that, indicates we may not have a totally rational actor on that side.
Mm-hmm.
So his other great problem, of course, is that if he is, he has done so much damage to the interests of the ruling family, has jailed so many of them, shaken them down for their wealth and so forth. Some of it was justified, made him popular. But at the same time, he has made so many enemies domestically that if he lost power and was sort of put out on the street, he would be a dead man.
So you mentioned the word, Mr. Ambassador, incompetent. And you're the first one that said that, and I've got it written down because I think that really sums this up. A lot of the things that MBS has gotten involved in have not been successful, whether it be the way he's conducting the Yemeni civil war, which I think even supporters of that would say has been a disaster on every possible level. The blockade he did with Egypt, Bahrain, and the Emirates against Qatar has been a total colossal failure. It's almost a comedy show because the country of Qatar, the state of Qatar, is much better off economically and otherwise than they were before the blockade. And all it meant is that the Saudis aren't getting any of their business. I mean, it was really a complete catastrophe. I mean, if you went to Harvard, Mr. Ambassador, and taught a business class on international relations, how to do a blockade and have it blow up in your face, that would be your class. I mean, it's a disaster. So everything the guy gets involved in blows up. At what point does the father say, you know, maybe he's just not equipped?
Well, I think that's the truth. The problem is that the father may not be in a situation where he can actually call the shots, though he did call the shots when we moved the embassy to Jerusalem, and this was too much for the father, and he intervened. But that may have been an issue of such religious importance to the father that he was no longer prepared, that he could actually stand up to his son on that. But yet, the father right now, I mean, I agree, if this was a sensible world, the thing to do would be for the father to step in and remove his son from power. But the father must also be conscious of the fact that so many people now hate his son that he would be exposing him to retaliation, personal retaliation. Mm-hmm. And like I said, he could very well be a dead man if he left power.
Mm-hmm.
So that's got to be a complicating factor in the father's calculations.
Mr. Ambassador, how is this going to affect the balance of power in the Middle East, especially as it results to the Iranians?
The Iranians must be absolutely speechless at their good luck on this one. I imagine what the Iranians are going to let this one play out personally, further undermining the position of Saudi Arabia. Their ability, the Iranian position now of being able to say, you shouldn't have done away with the nuclear agreement, the JCPOA. You know, what are you doing, favoring somebody who's much worse than anything we've done?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's an arguable question, but right now the Saudis have made the headlines, not them. They've made all the negative headlines. So for them, it's really a question of sitting it out. I think they can, they should be able to play the propaganda part of the war with of the Yemen war really well, and the amount of any residual support there might have been for the Saudis in the Yemen war is just going to be go away. The other big winner on this are the Turks.
Mm-hmm.
Erdogan is now in a position of being able to say, he's competing with the Saudis for influence and mastery of that part of the world, and they are not going to be in a position to stand up to him.
Mm-hmm.
So, all in all, it is a lose-lose for the Saudis all around, and it's, unless we act really forcefully, it's a lose-lose for us as well. We do need to put the Saudis in their place to make sure the Saudis understand who they really are. They are not the country that calls the shots for the United States of America. Either we're calling the shots or no one's calling the shots, but they're not the ones calling it for us. And so I feel very strongly,
yes,
that we need to, this stand up and say, this is simply intolerable conduct. It affects our interests. It certainly tarnishes the president's brand.
Mm-hmm.
No matter how you slice it, they have now embarrassed him and his family.
Mm-hmm.
And they've done it big time.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you get out of this? The way you get out of this is by making it very clear. Make it very clear that this is not an acceptable course of action.
Mr. Ambassador, how does this episode, this catastrophe for MBS, relate this now back to the other states in the Gulf? How does it affect Qatar's position and the blockade and the position that the administration has taken on that? Will there be any change in that? Will they look at it differently being that the biggest military base that we have is there right by Doha. How will that might change, if at all?
I don't think it'll have much of a change. It'll make the Qataris a little bit more welcome here in Washington. But by and large, we've now gotten to the point where the Qataris are comfortable in the relationship with us.
Mm-hmm.
They're having a biannual strategic dialogue with us. They continue to buy large quantities of military equipment. The base functions very well. If anything, the base has become more important.
Right.
So from the Qatari point of view, I think this is, it's a net plus, but they're already in a good place. The country that I think is going to be most affected by this among the other Gulf states will be the UAE, because Mohammed bin Salman is seen as the protege of the Crown Prince of the UAE, Mohammed bin Zayed, who's older and smarter and far more capable, and who has been able to use Mohammed bin Salman to carry much of the UAE's agenda. I mean, for example, it's pretty clear to everybody in the region that the campaign against Qatar was dreamed up by the UAE for the UAE's own reasons, and Mohammed bin Salman was persuaded to go along. Also, the UAE has very much taken the lead. UAE is pursuing a separate policy from Saudi Arabia in Yemen. The UAE seems to be trying to hive off the southern part of Yemen, make it an independent country dependent on the UAE.
Right.
And the UAE has been using Saudi power to pressure the Omanis.
Mm-hmm.
Into falling in line with them, so far unsuccessfully, mm-hmm. but they needed the Saudis to be able to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, all of a sudden, Saudi Arabia is going to be rather toxic for the Emirates as well. So a large part of what they have been doing in their own policies in the region have been based upon the fact that they've been able, because of the personal relationship between the two crown princes, they've been able to get the Saudis to back them on virtually everything. And that now becomes a much more difficult story to sell in the region.
So, Mr. Ambassador, what you're saying is the Emiratis might want to distance themselves from Mohammed bin Salman a little bit instead
yes.
of...
I think at least in the public perception,
right.
they're really going to have to do that.
Right. I've only got a couple more minutes, Mr. Ambassador. I want to get your take on Nikki Haley's resignation. I know the president says he's interviewing five people. You're in that world. You're former ambassador to the state of Qatar, now president of the U.S. Qatar Business Council. What did you think of the timing of Ambassador Haley's resignation, and who do you see as a viable replacement?
The timing, I think, has two parts to it. She didn't want to make it look like she was bolting at the end of the first half of the term. She needed to give the president enough time. She's going to stay in the job till the end of the year,
mm-hmm.
which gives the president enough time. So I think she's got personal reasons for leaving. She has been in politics for so long. There have been newspaper stories that her personal family finances are not in really great shape. And I'll tell you, we don't pay our ambassadors very well. I mean, this is I'm prejudiced. I used to be one myself.
Right.
But we really don't pay our ambassadors very well. And living in New York, even though there's extras, it doesn't come anywhere near covering the cost of living and being the ambassador in New York and all the things you have to do.
Right.
It's a huge burden. We've got this problem in a number of other major countries around the world, like London and so forth. So if you asked me, I think it was simply she didn't realize being governor of a state is one thing. You know, she's a good person. She's an honest person. So I don't think she was taking advantage of her official position. But if you're in New York, on a the salary the State Department pays the ambassador, even the fact that you're tossing in the house and a few other things, really doesn't cover it. So I think for her, there may have been a personal economic necessity to step aside for a little bit. Mm-hmm. She would also be a great asset for the Republican Party in a couple of years' time. Mm-hmm. She's smart. She can take middle positions. She's very articulate. She looks sassy and a little bit sassy and brassy, but that's okay. That works in today's politics as well. And, of course, she's now a woman in a minority, which is something that the Republican Party really desperately needs for its future. So I think she has a long-term future. She's young. Mm-hmm. When you're 2024, maybe, she's somebody around. I don't know if she wants to run for president, but she is going to be a person who can get really get a lot of people who today wouldn't vote Republican.
Replacement.
Yeah.
Who will be her replacement?
A replacement? I have no idea. I've been looking at a little bit of the names. It really boils down to whether or not John Bolton has a big voice
right
in this election. John Bolton, for whatever his good qualities are, is very much a firebomb thrower. And he's going to be trying to persuade the president to come up with someone like that, which I think was a mistake when he was our ambassador at the United Nations. He basically lost his ability to control that body, because a lot of the way the UN functions and a lot of the stuff that we get done, we actually get a lot more done than you would think from newspaper accounts. Mm-hmm. But most of that comes because if you've got a smart ambassador who reaches out to people and makes a lot of friends, the UN is a place for a guy who knows because they grant a lot of small favors. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the small countries who vote in the UN really need those small favors. So if the U.S. ambassador in the United Nations knows how to play these people well, it's a transactional game, but, I'll make sure the city of New York doesn't really enforce all the parking tickets you guys got. I can get your vote in a couple of things. And this is the way the U.N. operates under the fancy stuff at the top, under the big news. So what we need is a schmoozer. This is the perfect place. If there's any southern politicians there, this is the perfect place for a southern politician. These guys are real experts at schmoozing. So that's where I would put my cards. But whether or not they do so, I can't tell, because it depends on who's got the president's ear on this one. Remember, this is the most important ambassadorial position. The ambassador to the United Nations is the only American ambassador who sits regularly in cabinet meetings and has instant access to the president. So it's a very, very important position, and you need to balance this out carefully as to who you put in that position. That's the qualifications. I don't know what the inner workings are right now inside the White House to decide who's going to be the job or not.
Well, we heard Rick Grenell from Germany has interviewed, but we've also heard that the president prefers a woman to take the place of Nikki Haley. So those are in conflict. So no one knows. We do know that he's interviewed five people, but sounds like he's going to make a very deliberate decision. But it's very interesting what you say, and certainly the profile that you outlined doesn't exactly fit National Security Director John Bolton.
No.
It doesn't exactly. He's not the schmoozing type, I can say.
Exactly.
Having had him on.
Radio, AM 600, 101.1 FM, WBOB.
With SRN News, I'm Gordon Griffin. At least 2,000 mourners packed the Soldiers and Sailors Memorial Hall in Pittsburgh today, and thousands more stood outside at a vigil for the 11 who died in a shooting during Sabbath services at a Pittsburgh synagogue. Meanwhile, federal prosecutors are seeking approval to pursue the death penalty against Pittsburgh synagogue shooting suspect Robert Bowers. Police responding to the shooting at the Tree of Life synagogue wounded Bowers and arrested him. He is scheduled to appear in court early Monday afternoon for a hearing. Homeland Security Secretary Kirstjen Nielsen says that the thousands of Central American migrants on a caravan moving through southern Mexico will not be welcomed in the United States. Nielsen says that migrants on the caravan have broken laws along the way. She made her remarks on Fox News Sunday earlier today. More details at srnnews.com. I'm Gordon Griffin.
Are you putting your retirement savings in a 401k, IRA, or investment account? Then I have one word of advice. Stop. Many experts warn of a stock market crash any day now. And if it's anything like the last two crashes, you could lose 50% or more of your hard-earned savings in the Wall Street casino. Can you afford to lose half of your retirement savings again? Hey, you don't have to lose a penny, because there's a better, safer way to save for retirement. And you can learn all about it in a free report. This is the report Wall Street and big banks desperately hope you never see. Why? Because this method continues to grow your money even when the market tumbles. It lets you take back control of your money and finances, and it gives you penalty-free access to your savings. Plus, it beats the pants off any 401k or IRA. These are uncertain times, so get the information you need today to guarantee your retirement security. To get this free report, go to bankonyourself.com right now. That's bankonyourself.com. bankonyourself.com.
Attention all men. Have Viagra and Cialis let you down? Think your best days are behind you? Think again. If you suffer from any type of ED, regardless of your age or medical history, the doctors at Alpha Medical Group can help you now. There is no needles, no surgery, and no medication. Just the newest available proven treatment from Europe using acoustic energy waves. Our FDA-cleared medical device regenerates blood vessels and erectile tissue with short in-office sessions. And it's all done with virtually no needles, no surgery, and no medication. Call now for full information. Call 904. 904-763-1400. That's 904-763-1400. 100% natural, non-invasive way to fix erectile dysfunction. Call 904-763-1400 today and get your life back with Alpha Medical Group. Call 904-763-1400 or visit our website at alphamedicalgroup.com.
Canterfield in Clay County is now open. This senior living community provides elegant retirement living at its best. Everything at Canterfield is first class, from their luxurious independent villas to their assisted living and memory care apartment homes. Canterfield of Clay County residents are sure to spend carefree, activity-filled days in a pristine environment. Canterfield of Clay County truly is a place you'll be happy to call home. To schedule a personal tour, call 203-6100. That's 203-6100.
The latest traffic and weather on WBOB, your 2018 election authority.
The president going to Houston, Texas, having the mega rally of all time. Biggest rally in the history of rallies. Over 100,000 people requesting tickets. It was at the Toyota Center in Houston, where the Houston Rockets play. My team, that's even better. And I've been there many times seeing my Rockets play. And what an event that was for the president last night. Meantime, we got this caravan making its way to the United States. The president says no way he's going to stop it. And the Democrats right now are the party of mobs and caravans. I mean, that's really what this has come down to. They want to talk about health care. Well, it's tough to do that when their solution is a $36 trillion price tag with mobs and caravans. It's unbelievable. Joining us now to break this down, Corey Lewandowski. He was the former campaign manager for the Trump for President campaign. He started it all. He's also now a noted author and a writer. His book, Let Trump Be Trump, best book written on the campaign. Buy that. You can buy it at Amazon, your favorite bookstore, etc. B. Dalton, wherever you go. Now, he's also got a new book coming out November 20th, Trump's Enemies from Within. He's going to name names of people still in the government, still in the West Wing, still in the White House, who are daily undermining President Trump's America First agenda. And he's joining us now, Corey Lewandowski. Great to have you, Corey.
John, I offer my condolences for your Astros just to start off. I'm very sorry we beat you so badly. But
you know
what? I get tired of winning, John.
You you should get tired of winning. And I got to admit, Corey, that was an old-fashioned spanking you gave us. And after the first game that we won 7-2, I thought, you know what? We exposed their pen. And I think we're going to win this series of five. I sent you a text. I said, you're never going to see Fenway again. They're not getting out of Texas. And it was quite the opposite. So I have to congratulate you.
Well, you were right. You were right. We made the prediction and you were absolutely right. We never went back to Fenway Park. You were absolutely right. And so now I'm looking forward to the World Series starting tonight. And look, this is a historic matchup of two teams that haven't met each other in almost 100 years in the World Series. So it's exciting.
Yeah, it is exciting. Now, I'm only going to watch it if my son has it on and I happen to pass the TV, because as soon as the Astros were out, baseball season is over for me. I don't care. And although this should be a good series for people that are for baseball fans, but I'm still kind of hurting over the absolute shellacking we took at the hands of the Red Sox. And who the heck is Milton Bradley Jr.? Where'd this guy come from?
Guy's a monster. Look, you had Altuve who was hurt, you know that, so that didn't help you.
Right.
And Jackie Bradley Jr. Milton Bradley was the game show. It was the game.
Whatever.
Jackie Bradley's a baseball player, but look, he had a monster series, and you look at Mookie Betts, and I think the umpires, I know you'll disagree, made the right call in that fan interference call that took that home run away. But anyway, look, I thought it was great baseball. It was fantastic to watch on my side, and I a few times I kept sweating it in the ninth inning when the bases were loaded, but we ended up getting out a couple good wins, and so I'm excited about the series tonight.
All right, well, good luck, and look, you had to go through the same razzing with me 12 months ago where we eliminated you in the first round, so I understand it. So good luck to your Red Sox. Let's get Corey to this caravan. This is a disaster right now. It's now up to 8,000 people, we just understand now. It's up to 8,000. It's growing as it goes. It's like an invasion into the United States. The president said he's going to stop it. He's got a number of policies out there. What's the deal with this thing?
Well, John, what we've seen now is that the three nations that have sent most of these people in the caravan receive just under $540 million in financial aid from our country and foreign aid, those three major countries. And they don't seem to have done anything to prevent this caravan from either starting or preventing people from joining it. And I understand we are a welcoming nation, but you can't have 7,000 people walking to your borders and think that it's okay. This would never be tolerated in any other region of the world. Can you imagine for one second 7,000 individuals trying to walk their way into Israel or to pick a country, Germany, Saudi Arabia, Great Britain, whatever it would be if they could do that? It would never happen. But the mainstream media says, well, these people need help. And they may need help, but there is a process to go about asking for asylum, whether it's political asylum or otherwise. And these people have chosen not to follow those rules. They want to bypass the rules. They want to attempt to come into the country illegally. And now we're seeing, John, that this caravan is not a walking caravan of 2,000 miles. They now have vehicles that are driving them for certain portions of it. It's much more organized. We know there are dissidents in there, clearly from Venezuela and other places. And we have to be very concerned from an intelligence and national security perspective of who is coming into our country that we don't know about.
All right, Corey, the president over Twitter and at campaign rallies and in talking to reporters impromptu has said the following. He's going to withdraw U.S. financial aid to El Salvador, Guatemala, and Honduras. He's going to look at deploying the U.S. military, not the National Guard, to the border. He said he would be open to declaring a state of national emergency, and it goes on from there. And you mentioned we don't know who's in this caravan. There's been a lot of allegations that it's human traffickers are there. It's drug cartel people are there. What are the president's options now?
Well, look, the first and most important job of any president of the United States is to protect his citizens from all enemies, both foreign and domestic. And he swears to the Constitution that he's going to do that. And part of that commitment is making sure that U.S. citizens are protected. And allowing 7,000 individuals who are undocumented to come into the country is not a protection. We are the most welcoming country in the world. We take 1 million immigrants a year into the country, more than any other country in the world. We are a nation of immigrants. But there is a proper way to do this. And so I think the president's going to work with Mexico to try and get their leaders to stop or at least slow this caravan down. But ultimately, what we need is a wall on the southern border. And without the wall, we will have a human wall of military people who will ensure that people who are in this country illegally are not allowed to do that. And I know it sounds harsh, and I'm not advocating for violence. What I'm advocating for is the right way of doing things. And if that means those people who are coming here, I believe many of them are using children, and they are using, you know, look, John, think about it. You're going to take a woman and her child and have her walk 2,000 miles, which is the distance we're talking about, 2,000 miles with nothing but the clothes on her back, the shoes on her feet, no food for her child, walking through Central America and up through Mexico, and that's a good idea to hopefully get to the United States only to be turned around? This doesn't make any sense. I believe part of this has been organized by people who know that the midterm elections are 2 weeks away and want to make this a political issue. Now, I don't know who's funding it, but I am gravely concerned about part of some of the people who may be in that caravan who aren't here for political asylum and are only here to try and hurt the United States.
So, Corey, is this going to backfire? I mean, if indeed it was set for or it was inspired for political reasons, right, so that we could get back to the narrative of kids in cages and zero tolerance and that fiasco that went down on that policy, is this something that could actually backfire now on the Democrats?
Well, I think it does backfire because if you remember, John, you look, when Hillary Clinton was a U.S. senator, she voted for a border wall, not a wall, but a fence. Okay, there was money that was supposed to be allocated for that. It was never completed. And what this president has asked for by both Republicans and Democrats was, give me the financial resources to allow me to build the wall on the southern border. And what the president offered, which I thought was very aggressive, was a pathway to citizenship for those individuals who are in the country through what they call no fault of their own, commonly referred to as Dreamers. The president offered that in relation to, give me the money for the wall, you give me the money, and we'll put a path forward. And the Democrats didn't get that done. They didn't want that done because they want to politicize this. And now that we're 2 weeks to the day from the midterm elections, the issue of immigration is at the forefront again. And from an issues perspective, I don't think it helps the Democrats because they have been soft on immigration and soft on open borders, and that's not where the American people are by and large.
As we go into the midterms now, Corey, there's a new poll out by the Washington Post just today, and it's basically looked at not just the generic ballot, which has people running for Congress in Los Angeles and New York City, et cetera, with wide leads that influence that generic ballot. But it looked at the 50 most closest races, all toss-ups that are going to basically decide who controls the House of Representatives. And in this poll, the Post had to admit that all of the races that the Democrats were leading had tightened, and now Republicans are either tied or ahead, and the tide in the districts that matter was turning in the direction of the president and his party. And the Wall Street Journal reported yesterday that the president's approval rating is up to, get this, 47%, right? That's up dramatically from where it was just not that far back. How do you read this?
Well, John, it's clearly a good sign for the Republicans. They have some wind at their backs. If you look at historical perspectives, this president is now more popular at his first midterm than many others going into their midterms, including Barack Obama. But the media doesn't want to say that. They don't want to talk about that narrative. It almost always gets glossed over. But your earliest point on this topic is the most important. In the places where the Democrats were supposed to win in a walk, in seats where they knew that they had good candidates and they were going to lock up those elections and pull away early, they haven't been able to do that. And in the competitive Republican district. I just think of Virginia, whether it's David Brad or Scott Taylor or Barbara Comstock, in the races where the Republican seats, we see them not only holding on, but expanding some leads in places with 2 weeks to go. By and large, not on an every case basis, Republicans are in a better position today than they were just last week. And what that means is voters are coming home. They're seeing the more money in their paychecks. They're seeing more money in their bank accounts. They're seeing more job opportunities. And they know what's at stake in the November elections, which is returning a majority to give us less regulation, more tax cuts, and an opportunity to grow our businesses, or going back to the way it used to be, which is putting a majority in place which wants to overburden you with government rules and regulations and believe that the government is the solution to your problems. So I think people are realizing it. They're squarely focused now. And part of the reason that they're squarely focused is the Trump-Pence team has been on the road campaigning all over the country in key congressional districts, key Senate races, to make sure the voters know exactly what's at stake in 2 weeks.
You're with the John Fredericks Radio Network. You're Godzilla of the Truth in America. We're with Corey Lewandowski. He is the author. He's now an author. It's kind of amazing, Corey. You went from campaign manager to Trump for president to an author. He's written the best-selling book, Let Trump Be Trump, a must-read on the campaign. You can buy that at B. Dalton. You can buy it at Amazon, your favorite bookstore. You can buy it wherever you want. So it's really neat. And he's also coming out with a brand-new book on November 20th, Trump's Enemies from Within, and he's going to be naming names about some of the shenanigans that goes on in the White House every day. And he's also with Vice President Mike Pence Political Action Committee, which is a hard, this is a hard money pack. And so he's traveling with the VP around the United States, trying to win as many key congressional and Senate races as they can. Corey, there was an article yesterday published in the New York Times about an altercation between yourself and John Kelly, chief of staff, back in February, where they alleged that he grabbed your necktie, which seemed kind of odd to me. It doesn't seem like the kind of guy that would do that. Is that fake news or is that real?
You know, John, it's amazing. They're talking about something that may or may not have transpired from 8 or 9 months ago, right? Look, I've got a very good relationship with John Kelly. I work with John Kelly on behalf of the president to make sure that the president's agenda is being implemented. I do it from the outside. John does it from the inside. And we've agreed to work together very closely to make sure that the Trump-Pence agenda continues to get implemented. So, you know, the stories of chaos in the White House are clearly overblown. The stories of mayhem is just not true. And this is one of those narratives that the media wants to talk about because it suits their agenda as opposed to what's really going on, which is more Americans back to work, more people working now than ever before in our history, more the lowest unemployment rate for African Americans and Hispanics in recorded history, the lowest unemployment rate for women in 65 years. That's what the American people care about, and everything else is just salacious, you know, rumors and innuendo.
Let's get to the Khashoggi affair. President Trump yesterday, Corey, saying that he was not particularly convinced about the Saudi narrative. What happens now?
Look, I don't think there's any questions that the Saudi have responsibility for what took place at Khashoggi. But we should also understand that this should not be surprising to many people. This is something that, you know, while I don't travel to Saudi Arabia or other parts of the world, unfortunately, happens all too often. But there has to be accountability. What that accountability is, I don't know. We need to get all the facts. But, the latest part of this story is that they had a body double wearing Khashoggi's clothes walking around to make it look like the guy was still alive. They've now admitted he's dead. They said it was a result of a fist fight. I call that into question, and I'm not a national security expert, and I have no information that the American people don't have. But just from a very basic perspective, it seems very difficult to imagine a man of Khashoggi's age getting into a fist fight with 15 other professionals and thinking that that's going to result in the right outcome. And it clearly didn't, but we need to make sure we know what an appropriate response is. We have to get all the facts, and it's something that I hope happens very quickly because there should be accountability if what we believe transpired did transpire.
Well, I think the president is going to act. He said he was going to get with Congress and find a bipartisan way to respond to this, but we're going to wait till all the facts come out. Corey, I want to get to the election. The House now hanging in the balance. Races are tightening. About a month ago, it looked bleak that the Republicans could actually maintain control. Now it seems to be the wind starting to be shift. We've also got, Corey, reports that Republican early voting is breaking all known records. True or false?
No, it's very true. And, you know, John, I love doing this with you every week because it reminds the listeners of exactly what's at stake here. But, you know, we talked about this last week. I believed, and I said it then, the Republicans hold the majority by a couple seats. I am more optimistic today based on the work that the Trump-Pence team has been doing around the country to get people fired up. But I'll tell you, I was with a series of individuals last night talking race by race, and we believe there are going to be more opportunities that the Democrats have not even thought about. And let me just tell you one of them. I think we've got a chance to win a U.S. Senate race now in Wisconsin. I didn't believe that 3 weeks ago. The race right now is about a 2.5 to 3 point race. Nobody thought that. Scott Walker, who is the governor, is opening up a much bigger lead in Wisconsin than people had thought he was going to. That's all moving in the right direction, and that's a positive for the Republicans. If you start winning and stealing races, and I mean that in a positive sense, in a place like Wisconsin where the Democrats weren't focused on, it could be a very good night 2 weeks from today.
Well, I think it is. I'm predicting right now the Republicans are going to pick up 5 seats in the U.S. Senate. I know we've gone over this. I don't share your enthusiasm for Bob Huggin in New Jersey, but I think they hold serve in Nevada, Arizona, Tennessee, Texas. I think that's done. And then they flip 5 seats, Montana, North Dakota, Missouri, Florida, and Indiana. So there's plus five. If you win Wisconsin, that could be plus six. Corey, the rally last night, the president does a rally in Houston, Texas, at the Toyota Center. Been there many times. I'm a Rockets fan.
Yep.
They got 110,000 ticket requests online. Have you ever seen anything like this in your life?
No, I've never seen anything like it. Everything is bigger in Texas, and I understand that. But that goes to talk about how excited the base is in Texas to support Donald Trump and Ted Cruz. Look, Beto O'Rourke has outraced Senator Cruz by $40 million. He's going to lose that election by 8 to 10 points. Mm-hmm. But that goes to show, John, the one narrative we've heard for the last 6 or 8 or even 10 years is that the Democrats now think Texas is in play. That has not come to fruition. They have not elected a statewide Democrat in that state in 2 decades. And the bottom line is, when Donald Trump shows up down there, people are excited. They are happy. They want to see him. And they had a record number of requests. As you know, they had to move the venue to the larger arena, had a capacity crowd, plus thousands more outside watching on the Jumbotron. People are fired up. They want to see Trump. And the people of Texas have always responded.
We're with Corey Lewandowski. He's a senior advisor for Great America Committee. You can get more information. Go to greatamericacommittee.com. That is Vice President Mike Pence's Hard Money Political Action Committee. He's also author of the book, Let Trump Be Trump. And he's got a new book coming out November 20th. This is going to be New York Times bestseller, must read. Can't put it down. Got to buy it. Got to pre-order it. Trump's enemies. Corey, a lot of people talking about your upcoming book. When are we going to see an excerpt of it?
You know, John, I like to build the suspense, as you know. So we're going to get through the midterm elections in 2 weeks. And then I think you'll start seeing some drips and drabs right after the election. You know, the book has now been to bed for about 4 weeks. And so I've made some predictions that I hope come true in the election. I think they will. I'm pretty good at this stuff. Mm-hmm. And then you'll see it shortly right after. You'll see some excerpts right after that.
Okay. And we are anticipating that whatever happens on November 6th, come post-midterms, that the president is going to clean house and get people in there that are actually helping drive his agenda forward. Tell me I'm right.
You're 100% correct. Look, I think every president after midterm election, regardless of the success or failures of their party, reshuffles the deck a little bit. I think you'll see some changes in the cabinet. Some of those have been already discussed, and whether they come to fruition or not, I couldn't speak to. But I think it's very typical to see changes take place after the midterm elections, regardless of the outcome of the election.
Corey, I want to thank you for your time. Let Trump be Trump. Got to buy it now. Let Trump be Trump. More information, go to greatamericacommittee.com. Corey Lewandowski, former campaign manager, Donald J. Trump. Thanks for being with us, man. The president has spent the past 24 hours unloading on this migrant caravan, which began its travels as a group of now 8,000. The caravan reached Tapachula, Mexico on Monday, about 1,100 miles from McAllen, Texas, and it continues to trek north towards the southern border. But the Democrats, they want to keep the focus on health care because the polling shows that that is the number one issue on people's mind. And joining us now to try to understand why health care is such an important issue and is on so many people's minds during this upcoming election and beyond is my good friend Dale Bellis, who is the executive director and founder of Liberty HealthShare. Now, myself and my family have been proud members of Liberty HealthShare, forget this, 7 years. It is the best thing we have ever done. You know, all the healthcare debate, we have to debate it and we talk about it and we analyze it for you on the air. But I'm not personally involved in it because my family got out of this a long time ago. We got out of the whole Obamacare healthcare rat race. And we went to Liberty HealthShare, which the service is phenomenal. This is a great organization where it's different because everybody shares in their own cost of health, those members. And it is growing every day. It is the best kept secret in America. And I urge all of my listeners. Now, if you work for the federal or state or county government and you've got a great health plan, or you work for a big company and they provide it and you do a copay, that's fine. But if you're an independent contractor, or you work in the gig economy, or you're on a 1099, or you work for a small company like we have, and we can't buy the insurance, it would put us out of business, it's too expensive, or you're a business owner, any of those things, then Liberty HealthShare is a phenomenal opportunity for you. And as I said, my family of three, and I've got a 14-year-old, even on it when he was seven. And it's the greatest plan. It's like paying cash. It's easy to do. The service is great. Everything gets done. They negotiate everything on your behalf. There's no paperwork. There's no paperwork. It's just you pick up the phone. I mean, you send them the stuff. You send them the bill. That's it. And you get all the preemptive care and all that. But you got to check it out. Go to libertyhealthshare.org. Check it out. Ask for a quotation. That's all. You're going to be shocked by it because you're going to say, no, this is too good to be true. There's got to be a catch. There's no catch. Joining us now to help understand what is going on today in healthcare with this debate, executive director, founder of Liberty HealthShare, Dale Bellis. Hey, Dale.
It is such a pleasure to be with you, John. Thank you for the invitation.
Yeah, because I'm a true believer, Dale. When you believe in something, it's really easy to talk about it because I'm not only a believer, I'm a customer, and I have been for a very long time. And we wouldn't trade it for anything. You know, the other day, if I got somebody that just came to me and said, hey, join our whatever it is, you know, organized care, Humana or something, pay $200, I wouldn't do it because it's a hassle. LHS.
In addition to that, we band together, as you've just said, to pay each other's medical bills on the basis of our shared values and beliefs, but we also stimulate one another to leave